EMNs. Yeah, I suppose in hematology you have a couple of other names for them too, right? Segs, yeah, and bands and stuff like that. Although we're not that concerned about segs and bands in this class, because those are maturation levels, and we're not all that concerned about maturation. But certainly EMNs and colonies you should know. They are actively phagocytic cells. That's also pretty straightforward. That's their main job is to phagocytize. Yeah. They have the digestive enzymes, and the enzymes are found in lysosomes. Do not confuse lysozyme with lysosomes. Right? So lysosomes are these little vesicles inside the cells that are loaded with digestive enzymes. That's the hallmark of these. And then there are a lot of toxic compounds. They actually undergo what's called a respiratory burst as they become activated, and they produce a lot of oxidizing compounds like superoxide and things like that are actively lethal to bacteria and viruses and parasites. Basophils. Basophils also have a tissue phase called the mast cell. For our purposes, we consider, as immunologists, we often consider basophils and mast cells really the same cell, it's just they're different places. These are very, very important in terms of the inflammatory response. And I have a little bit of specificity here as to some of the compounds that basophils contain, like histamine, yeah, and what it does, causes vasodilation, now blood vessels open up, drop in blood pressure. Also bronchoconstriction, yeah, so it causes the bronchioles to become tighter. Heparin is there, which I'm sure you realize you understand from blood collecting methodologies. Leukotrienes and prostaglandins really fall into the same category. They're kind of variants of similar types of compounds. These are derived from fatty acids. Fatty acids, what are fatty acids? Long hydrocarbon chains, right, for the carboxyl group, yeah? You have enzymes that convert fatty acids into these compounds, leukotrienes and prostaglandins, and these are very, very active in, huh? It's right in your notes. Yeah, it's right in your notes, leukotrienes. You have your notes in front of you? I'm just going through your notes, so if you have them in front of you, it's a lot easier. This is lecture two, or chapter two. So these compounds are very, very active in inflammatory responses and muscle contractions and pain. And I think I mentioned to you once before, what does aspirin do?
Anti-inflammatory.
It inhibits the synthesis of prostaglandins. Yeah. So a lot of, what are NSAIDs?
Non-steroidal
anti-inflammatory drugs, right? And what do they do, many of them?
Inhibit
prostaglandin synthesis. So whenever you inhibit prostaglandin synthesis, you will inhibit inflammatory processes. There was a very famous one in the last year or so, the COX-2 inhibitors. Does that ring a bell with anybody?
No.
COX-2? COX, what does COX stand for? Anybody know? These are the enzymes that make prostaglandin with the triene. The cyclooxygenases, which you don't need to know right now, but there was a drug that was withdrawn from commercial marketing over the last year and a half. Almost, you know, Merck was very concerned about it. It was a COX-2 inhibitor. A couple of Vioxx was the name. People were developing heart attacks and stuff.
Yeah.
A very powerful anti-inflammatory. And then finally, the last granulocyte on the list, eosinophils. These are very important in fighting worm infections. I have helminth parasites. What are helminths?
Worms.
Worms, yes. Yeah, so worm parasites. Okay. Eosinophils also are very, very much involved in, as I say here, in allergies. In particular, asthma. So there's an autoimmune complication or aspect. So that's the one big group of white blood cells, the so-called granulocytes. The second big group listed here are the monocytes, which include the macrophages. I'm also including the dendritic cells under this category. Yeah, and I guess. overarching term here are the APCs. And what does APC stand for?
Antigen-presenting
cells. And that's probably, when you think of this group of cells, the monocytes, the macrophages, and the dendritic cells, that is their main function, is to take antigen, process it, and give it to which group of cells? Which lymphocytes?
T lymphocytes.
The T lymphocytes, yes. The T lymphocytes need to have antigen essentially pre-digested for them before they can come out. Okay? I give you a whole list of names here. Monocytes and macrophages, well, first off, monocytes are the blood form. Macrophages are the tissue form. Okay, so we have monocytes, and if they're in the tissues, they're called macrophages. Macrophages in different tissues are often given different names, and I have those listed for you here. Right? So you have the Kupffer cells, the microgliales. Microgliales, for instance, are in grain. Kupffer cells, anybody know where those are? In the liver, yeah. Alveolar macrophages, where would those be? In the lungs, yeah. Peritoneal macrophages. In the perineum, outside your intestines. So they're like, in fact, the girls in the back, the women in the back, are working with some mice this afternoon. They're pulling out peritoneal macrophages from those mice to grow in tissue culture. Osteoclasts, what would those be? Bone. Very involved in bone repair and bone recycling. Your bones are constantly recycling. Yeah, and the osteoclasts play a very big role in digesting bone for that purpose. And splenic macrophages, what would those be? In the spleen. So anyway, so macrophages are given special names in certain areas. Their main job, really, is to go around and eat a little bit of this and eat a little bit of that. They eat you as well as eat foreign stuff. Yeah? Any of your cells that appear damaged will be eaten by macrophages in a process known as phagocytosis. Yeah. So phagocytosis is that process. Now, the question is, how do they know what to eat? Yeah? And they have specific receptors, general receptors, some of them, that allow them to attach to damaged things. When your cells get damaged, you get like these oxidized compounds and things like that on the surface, and macrophages home in on that and they eat that. Red blood cells, when they get old, they start looking kind of raggedy, they get oxidized lipids in the surface, macrophages automatically eat these red blood cells, particularly as they pass through the spleen. Spleen is a big kind of recycling place for a lot of things in the body, particularly blood. This last group of cells under this group, under the antigen-presenting cells, dendritic cells, are kind of coming into their own right now. I mean, dendritic, in immunology, dendritic cells are kind of like the rage. Everybody's talking about dendritic cells. Where do they come from? They come from things that look like monocytes in the blood and also in the bone marrow. Yeah? But when they mature, they act different than macrophages. Yeah? Dendritic cells are actively phagocytic when they're young. Yeah, so they go around eating a bunch of things, and then they stop. And essentially at that point, they then move to the spleen or to the lymph nodes, where they sit there and just constantly keep presenting stuff that they ate when they were young.
Oh,
strange. It's almost like a science fiction story. You know, some kind of strange creature that only eats when it's young and then sits around and kind of poops out the rest of its life, you know, and that's it. Now, that's basically what they do. They're one of the cells that seem to be very important now in maintaining immunological memory. Yeah? You say you have memory cells. One of the things that people are beginning to realize now is, yeah, remember what I told you early on might be a little bit of a lie. Yeah, that these B cells, they mature and they become memory cells and they can you know, make antibodies for the rest of your life. Well, that's only part of the story. Yeah? Memory cells need to be constantly stimulated by dendritic cells. They ate the same stuff that was around when those memory cells were first formed. So you have this kind of long-term stimulation of B cells by dendritic cells in lymph nodes and in the spleen. Very interesting group of cells there. And there are some that have a special name, Langerhans cells. Yeah? Langerhans cells. These are not the islets of Langerhans. Yeah? Somewhere along the way, you may have learned something about diabetes and pancreas. Probably the same guy. I don't know. I'm not a real historian about this. Probably the same guy that maybe described both cells, but they're two different types of cells. Langerhans cells are dendritic cells that hang out in the skin. Yeah. Islets of Langerhans, not part of this course. So antigen presentation, blah, 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 blah. That's all defined for you. You know that antigen presentation involves a group of antigens on the surface of these cells called what?
MHC?
Yeah, MHC. Also known as major histocompatibility. Yes, I love that. It's such a wonderful alliteration in that word. Also known as what? Yes, very good. Also known as transplantation proteins, transplantation antigens. Doesn't matter. You can say it either way. Okay. Proteins or antigens. It does not matter to you. T-cell receptors can only recognize antigen if it's properly presented. That means the TCR is only attached to antigen, which is itself attached to MHC molecules. Yeah, and we've already talked about that a little bit. We'll see that in more detail as we move on here. Okay. All right, now we get into a little bit of detail. I'm not sure if I've covered this already for you, but there are two big classes of MHC. Have we talked about that, class 1 and class 2? Okay, is that what I said? All right, so now we're going to talk about that definition a little bit. There are two big classes of MHC, class 1 and class 2. As I say here, class 1 is found on all nucleated cells. You don't have to be a professional antigen-presenting cell to have class 1 antigen on your surface. All nucleated cells in your body have class 1 on them. Whatever that is, we'll cover it another time. Do you have any cells in your body that are not nucleated?
Red cells.
Red cells. It's the only cells I know of that aren't nucleated. So that's the only cells in your body that will not have class 1. Okay, all the others have class 1. All right. Now, the T cells that recognize class 1 are T cells that have a protein on their surface called CD8. Have we talked about CD8 and CD4 yet? Nope. All right, so let's introduce that concept. As far as T cells are concerned, there are a whole bunch of different classes, but there's one really early division of T cells. There are T cells that are called T4s or CD4 T cells, or CD4 positive T cells, and another big class of T cells known as T8 or CD8 positive T cells. Okay? And all we're really talking about here is we have a T cell, and we know that T cells have on their surface a molecule called the TCR, right? And now they're going to have another molecule on their surface, which we can refer to as CD8 or CD4, depending on which class they belong to. Okay? So this CD4, CD8 marker, yeah, is a surface marker on T cells. And it turns out CD8 interacts with MHC class 1. And CD4, as we'll talk about here in a sec, interacts with MHC class 2. So any cell that has MHC class 1 on its surface, which is all cells basically, except for red cells, all cells can interact with CD8 positive T cells. Does that make sense? All cells, because all cells have MHC class 1, they can all kiss CD8 positive T cells. And that's exactly what they do. So let's say a bone cell here, this is a bone cell, for some reason, yeah, has on its surface MHC class 1, it can interact with a CD8 positive T cell. And that may become important under certain circumstances, like virus infections and stuff like that. On the other hand, the only cells that interact with T cells bearing CD4 are professional antigen presenting cells, because those are the only cells that have MHC class 2. So these are only on what we call professional APCs. And by that I mean basically macrophages and dendritic cells. The only real professional antigen presenting cells. Macrophages and dendritic. Does that make sense? Okay, so now things are starting to get a little complicated. Okay? Two big classes of T cells, CD4 positive T cells, CD8 positive T cells. CD4 positive T cells interact with professional antigen presenting cells by virtue of the MHC class 2 that's on their surface. CD8 positive T cells interact with all nucleated cells in conjunction with the MHC class 1 that's on their surface. Okay? Okay. CD8 positive T cells are often referred to as cytotoxic T cells, because when they get activated, they kill the cells that activated them. Okay? And so like in this example, this is not something I want to concentrate on now, but if this is a CD8 positive cell, not a CD4, a CD8 positive cell, and interacts with a bone cell by virtue of MHC class 1, when that happens, this cell dies. Because this cell will then kiss that cell and go kaboom. Okay? So that's what CD8 positive cells do, many of them, most of them. CD4 positive T cells are often referred to as helper T cells. Because when they interact with professional antigen presenting cells, what they then do is they become activated to help other T cells and other B cells do the acquired immune response thing. Okay? So helper T cells get activated by professional phagocytes, professional antigen-presenting cells, to become activated to stimulate acquired immunity. And that's why they're called helper T cells. Help B cells and helper T cells. Then I go a little bit into a very short definition of phagocytosis there, that in order to phagocytize, remember in phagocytosis, what you're doing is you have a cell, like a macrophage, that wants to eat something that's out here. Well, the first thing it's got to do is it's got to attach to that. It can't just eat it. Yeah. It's got to have some kind of attraction to this. Okay? So that, of course, means there's got to be some kind of receptor involved. There's got to be a receptor. And I list a couple of receptors. The receptors on macrophages are divided into two big groups. The first group are the so-called non-specific pattern recognition receptors that are kind of general. They hit a lot of different things. And we've already talked about pattern recognition a bit and how difficult it is really to define that, because these are motifs or patterns that are found in the microbial world or on damaged cells that allows your phagocytes to recognize things, attach them, and bring them in. There are also specific receptors on macrophages, but we're not going to talk about those just yet. Okay. Right. As far as the, maybe we will. As far as the pattern recognition receptors are concerned, yeah, I list a couple of them there. There's the so-called the FMETLU phenylalanine receptor, the mannan binding lectin receptor, scavenger receptors. These look for oxidized lipids and stuff like that to bind to. And then there are the toll-like receptors. And we talked about the toll-like receptors. That's the only one in this group that I want you to know. Okay, because we've already talked about toll-like receptors. So these are the general pattern recognition receptors that are out there. Okay? There are also these other types of receptors which are specific that really bind to antibody and complement. But I'm not going to talk about that yet. We're going to wait until after the exam to talk about that. Okay? All right. lymphocytes. T cells, I've already defined CD4 and CD8 for you, okay? And you know about the T cell receptor, so that's pretty easy. Okay? B cells, yeah, they're called bone marrow derived, that's why they're called B. That's not really the truth, but for now, that'll be true. One of these days, we have more time, I'll talk to you about chicken butts, and then you'll find the real truth, the real significance of where B cells came from. But that'll be another lecture, and hopefully that excites you enough to come back to class. B cells make antibodies, yeah? And that you know that antibodies are also called immunoglobulin. If the immunoglobulin is on the surface, sometimes it's called SIG, which stands for surface IG, so you know that terminology you know. And if the B cell is actively secreting antibody, it's also called a plasma cell, so it's pumping it out. So, and we've been through this before, so you have a B cell with antibody on the surface, that's SIG or surface IG. If this B cell becomes activated so that now it starts making antibody and pumping it out, secreting it, that now is called a plasma cell. They're both B cells, it's just that this one is actively making antibody against itself. And then the third class of lymphocytes are the so-called natural killer cells, or large granular lymphocytes, and I'll let you read about that. And there's also a little figure in your textbook about that, and a tear receptor, and you can read about that. And then finally, the last class of cells, which aren't really cells, are the platelets, or the so-called thrombocytes, and you can read about that too. Two big things about platelets: they're very involved in blood clotting, and they're also, of course, involved in inflammation. They have a lot of mediators of inflammation. When they spill their cookies, inflammation results at the point at which this happens. All right? So the cells part you need to know, and then finally... No, you don't need to know about complement. You don't need to know about phagocytosis other than what I just said to you a few minutes ago. We're not going to go into the whole details about this for this exam. We will do this after the exam. We'll get into these mechanisms in a little bit more detail. The last thing in this chapter or in this lecture that I put together on the web is the structure of the immune system. You do need to know that, okay? So you need to know the lymphoid organs, the spleen, the lymph nodes, the thymus, and you need to know what the lymph vessels are. And there's a little...
Are you talking about this picture?
This little person picture and what's in that. And there's also a picture in your book on that, too. Okay. What is lymph? And where does that come from?
Lymph nodes?
Lymph comes from lymph nodes? Nope. Right? What is lymph? Forgot. Anybody? Donna? Lymph is really interstitial fluid. And I have that word for you there. What is interstitial fluid?
Fluid between the cells.
Fluid between the cells. Have you ever seen interstitial fluid?
No.
Really?
Well, maybe. I don't know. Oh, like when my knee starts scabbing up and it gets all juicy.
Yeah. If you've ever had a blister.
Oh,
yes. You ever have a blister that fills with that kind of clear fluid? That's interstitial fluid.
Yeah.
Or if you've ever had, I don't know if you've ever had this kind of problem. You ever had a situation where you basically just skinned yourself but it hasn't started to bleed yet? And you see that kind of clear fluid that oozes out?
Yeah.
That's interstitial fluid. And then usually as the blood vessels pop, then you bleed. Okay? That's also lymph. Okay? Interstitial fluid is the liquid part of the blood. It's basically plasma that leaks out of blood vessels. It passes through the blood vessels. Blood vessels do not let cells through, but they let fluid through. And that's one of the reasons why cells can be nourished by the liquid part of your blood. Well, this fluid is constantly leaking out of your blood vessels. And it's got to get back into the blood. And it is one of the primary functions of the lymphatic system to capture that fluid and get it back into the blood system. That's what it does. So the lymph vessels are these little open-ended vessels. They start out at your fingertips and your toes as little open-ended vessels that basically collect this fluid, yeah? And that fluid gets pumped back into the bloodstream. It travels up your arms, up your legs, etc. The vessels get bigger and bigger and bigger as they converge. At junctions between the vessels, you get little nodes of white blood cells, and those are called lymph nodes. Yeah? The bigger the vessels, the bigger the lymph nodes. So you got big ones under your armpits, you got big ones in your neck, you got big ones in your groin. Yeah? And then eventually, all these lymph vessels converge into what's called a subclavian vessel, yeah? And they empty into the venous supply and go into the heart, and it all gets mixed together. So all that fluid goes back into the blood just before it gets to the heart. How is it pumped? Muscle. So if anything interferes with muscle contraction, lymph begins to accumulate. So if you sit on an airplane for too long, yeah, you don't move your legs very much, your legs start swelling. If you have a problem with your digestive system so that your lymph vessels get occluded, your legs start swelling. Sometimes that happens to women in pregnancy, yeah, as they get a lot of pressure on their lymph vessels and the lymph just can't move very well. Sometimes parasites get into your lymphoid system, worms, and you get things like elephantiasis and stuff like that, where everything starts to expand hugely because all of the lymph that just starts collecting, yeah, as the blood vessels get, as the lymph vessels get occluded. So lymph is really actually very interesting. So lymph nodes, where do all blood cells come from? The bone marrow. So you can read about that. And then there's specialized areas like the salt and the malt and the galt and stuff like that. What's going to be on the exam? Everything up to this point. Everything up to this point will be on the exam. Make sure you know your amino acids. Okay? I promised you that a long time ago. You need to know the names. You need to know the abbreviations. You need to be able to recognize them when you see them. You need to know the three-letter abbreviations and the one-letter abbreviations. What is an epitope? An antigenic determinant that binds to what? What does that mean, an antigenic determinant? When it attaches to antibodies. So the epitope, yeah, is the same thing as an antigenic determinant, and it is the thing on the antigen that binds to red blood cell. That binds to an antibody. Now, you know that we covered rheumatic fever, right? We covered rheumatic fever, and we talked about antigenic mimicry, right? Antigenic mimicry, okay. So, what, and on your quizzes, you answered that question fairly well to me. I was pretty happy with the responses I got. So the basic understanding is that in rheumatic fever, you get infected with strep, right? And the strep induces antibodies, which then cross-react with heart muscle, tropomyosin and myosin. What is it on the strep that causes this?
It's an epitope that's similar to the ones on our protein muscle.
Yeah, it's an epitope, and it's on what protein on the strep?
M-protein.
M-protein, okay, so it's a streptococcal protein, right? It's a streptococcal protein, right? And so the antibodies react with the streptococcal protein, right? Okay. They also react with heart muscle, myosin, or tropomyosin, right? Okay. So what would that epitope be? If you have, this is strep, right? It's M-protein. M-protein is known to be a fibrillar protein. It's kind of a curlicue protein. What is a protein?
It's a sequence of amino acids.
Okay. So you have, if I were to enlarge this now, this is the protein, right? You're going to have amino acids here. Right. So the epitope must be, right, a sequence. A particular sequence of amino acids on this protein that would be shared with a sequence that's also found on heart mice. Okay. So it would be kind of what we often refer to as a sequential epitope, or a sequential determinant, because it's a particular sequence of amino acids. And so that sequence is going to be important. So does this make sense to you? Everybody understand? Because it will be on the exam. Right? It's a really cool problem. I already spent a few hours.
So we don't have the name of the epitope?
Huh?
What did you say again?
Oh, you don't need to know that. That's just to help you understand it. Like I told you, one of the things I like to do is I like to give you problems. Right? I like to see how you think and how you understand. So some of my problems are good, some of my problems I think are good, but they're really bad. you need to know rheumatic fever and you need to know what's going on there. PK, we talked about that. Basic chemistry, all this stuff, what's a nucleus, what's an electron, what's a proton, you know, what's atomic weights? I mean, I'm assuming you know that stuff, so if I throw that stuff out there, you won't get whizzed by it. All right? I'm trying to think of I gave you two handouts. We're going to be covering them.